This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Welcome to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at last night's Carabao Cup first quarter final as Aston Villa have put their place in the semi-finals. Three more to come tonight. Everton take on Leicester. Manchester City travel to Oxford United, and Manchester United are at home against Colchester United. So we'll be talking all things Carabao Cup. We'll be talking more about Leicester later in the hour. They made that trip to Merseyside today to take on Everton. Also a pretty significant game coming up on the weekend as they travel to the Etihad to take on Manchester City. We'll talk all things Liverpool. They obviously played a very, very young side in the Carabao Cup last night and got knocked out by Aston Villa. They're in action at 5:30 this evening, thousands of miles away over in Qatar. Jurgen Klopp has said, "We've travelled 3,000 miles to win a trophy, not talk politics." So we're talking all about Liverpool's game there as Takumi Minamino is closing in on becoming a Liverpool player. And we'll also talk a bit about Brighton. What's changed from last season to this season? Neil Morpay in good form. And what can Brighton fans hope for the rest of the season? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show. So plenty to go over the next hour. Remember, if you want to get in touch, that number again, 0208 7020 558, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon. So let's cover some of the top stories. We are in Carabao Cup quarterfinal week this week. We had one last night and then three more to come tonight at Villa Park last night. It was Aston Villa against Liverpool. Liverpool playing an extremely young side, an average age of 19 years and 182 days, the youngest in Liverpool's history. And Aston Villa did run out easy winners in the end. It finished Aston Villa 5, Liverpool 0. On the score sheet for Aston Villa, Conor Hourihan, Morgan Boy's own goal, two for Jonathan Codger and one for Wesley Moraes. So Aston Villa running out easy winners in the end, although I think the Liverpool youngsters can hold their heads up high. It was an incredibly young side. As I said, the average date of birth for the Liverpool starting 11 was June 18th, 2000. So a very extremely young side there, obviously very inexperienced at this level. And granted, Villa made changes, but still a lot of Premier League players in there, or at least kind of experienced Championship players in that side. Liverpool's youngsters actually had more possession, 57% of the possession away from home. They started the game quite brightly. I think one of the big differences you tend to see in these types of games when you've got a much more experienced side, the average age of the Villa side was 28 compared to 19 of Liverpool, is that cutting edge, that clinical composure in front of goal. And I think that was ultimately kind of the big difference between the two sides, was in front of goal, Villa took their chances, Liverpool created really good chances, couldn't quite convert them. So I think it's a massive learning curve. Obviously, congratulations to Aston Villa for taking their place in the semi-finals, but I think a lot of our youngsters can take a lot of heart from how they played yesterday, and it's a big learning experience for them because they are very, very young, as young as 16 in the form of Harvey Elliott. So they are extremely young. We're not just talking about young players here. We're talking about very, very young players. And so an experience like this playing for the Liverpool first team in a Carabao Cup quarterfinal, I think will help them a huge amount. And it shows that it's not easy. You can have a lot of potential, but obviously it's not just a guarantee that you're going to suddenly go on to become a world superstar. So obviously, well done to Aston Villa for booking their place in the semi-final. They can look forward to a double-legged semi-final at some point during January. In theory, two games away or a tie away from the final of the Carabao Cup. So we spoke to Max Stokes from the Villa on Tour YouTube channel yesterday, and he said that he wanted his side to go for a cup run and survival. And Villa are into the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup. Obviously, three more ties that will take place tonight. At Goodison Park, it'll be Everton versus Leicester. Everton are set to name a new manager over the next few days. Carlo Ancelotti is set to be that man. Sky in Italy were reporting yesterday that he is set to become the Everton head coach on a 4.5-year contract. That is likely to happen over the next couple of days. His son, Davide Ancelotti, who's been his assistant coach at Napoli, will be one of his assistants at Everton, as will Duncan Ferguson. He will stay on as an assistant there. They host Leicester, who obviously are going well in the Premier League in second place. Obviously, a huge game for them on the weekend at the Etihad against Manchester City. So that's obviously the first of the games. Oxford United will host Manchester City. Obviously, City are kind of being embroiled in this situation with Mikel Arteta, whether he's going to go to Arsenal. I think there is a growing confidence from the Arsenal perspective that they will get Mikel Arteta in time for the weekend's game, which is Everton against Arsenal at Goodison Park. We could potentially see two new managers in the dugout at Goodison Park on the weekend. But City potentially not particularly happy with the way in which Arsenal have gone about this. And it could even get a bit messier because Mikel Arteta supposedly wants to take the other assistant coach to Pep Guardiola as his assistant at Arsenal, potentially taking some of the recruitment staff as well. So I don't think we've heard the end of it over the next few days. The final game is at Old Trafford. Manchester United host Colchester. I think we can expect plenty of changes from all of the Premier League sides in Carabao Cup quarter-final action tonight. As I mentioned, in terms of the managerial situations, Carlo Ancelotti is expected to become the Everton head coach in a four and a half year contract either tomorrow or Friday. Duncan Ferguson will be in charge of tonight's game. Obviously, he's been in interim charge for the last couple of games, the win against Chelsea and the draw against Manchester United. He will remain in charge for tonight, but it is fully expected, with Ancelotti having travelled back to Napoli to sort out a few finer details, that he is set to become their coach on a 4.5 year contract either tomorrow or Friday ahead of the weekend's game against Arsenal, who themselves, as I mentioned, could have a new manager in the form of Mikel Arteta. But it feels like there are a lot more complications to come through before Mikel Arteta becomes the next Arsenal manager. Going through some of the other stories in the Premier League, a story that broke around this time last week, just about a week ago, when it emerged that Liverpool were closing in on the signing of RB Salzburg and Japan forwards Takumi Minamino from Salzburg, as I mentioned. And today it was revealed this morning that he will be undergoing a medical at Liverpool at Melwood today ahead of a January move, which would just cost Liverpool £7.25 million on his, which is his release clause. A fantastic bit of business by Liverpool. If you read some reports, it is believed that only Liverpool knew about this release clause because of the close relationship that some of the Liverpool board have, or the Liverpool hierarchy with Salzburg, that they'd established this great relationship, which meant that Liverpool could take advantage of this release clause when no one else was really aware of it. He impressed me when he played against us in both games in the group stages, a versatile, technically gifted, high-intensity, high-energy type of player, and also has the added benefit that he'll have a nice three-week break before joining Liverpool, because Salzburg have gone on their winter break now, as they do in the Austrian Bundesliga, and his last game would have been against Liverpool just a week ago, and now he has a nice three-week break. Obviously, he will become a Liverpool player on January 1st, as long as he doesn't fail the medical, and his Liverpool debut could be against Everton in the FA Cup. And Liverpool's last January signing, which was Virgil van Dijk, also made his Liverpool debut in the third round of the FA Cup at Anfield against Everton and scored a winner at the Kop End. So let's hope that Takumi Minamino can have a similar type of debut to Virgil van Dijk. Really interesting to hear some of the comments by Melissa Reddy the other day about how Salzburg run their club, about release clauses in particular, because the big question on everyone's lips really is why Takumi Minamino has such a small release clause, because it is believed around a lot of kind of football experts in Europe that his price is 3-4 times as much as that. And it's because the way in which Salzburg run, they know that they are a club that obviously produces players to go off and become stars in Europe, and so they don't want to hold players back by putting ridiculous release clauses into their contracts. And so that's why a situation like this, that Minamino has such a small contract. And also talking about how if Salzburg insisted on such large release clauses when they signed these players at 17, 18, then there wouldn't be the desire to join a club like Salzburg. They know what what type of a club they are. They are a breeding ground for other clubs. It's a really interesting look at how Salzburg run that business model. And effectively, I suppose, they see themselves as a business. And it's about maximising how much profit you can make. And by selling these players on for profit, that's only going to help. But as I said, Minamino undergoing a medical at Liverpool today, ahead of that January move. So long as he doesn't fail the medical, he'll become a Liverpool player on January 1st for just £7.25 million. His debut won't be against Sheffield United on the 2nd of January, because players wouldn't be eligible to play on the 1st or 2nd, even if the deal was agreed now. But he could make his debut in the FA Cup against Everton on the 6th of January. Or the 5th. I think actually it's the 5th of January. Obviously, Liverpool are playing thousands of miles away over in Qatar tonight in the Club World Cup. They take on Monterrey. It's a 5:30 kickoff tonight. The winner of that semi-final will play Flamengo, who beat Al Hilal in the other semi-final. So plenty to look out for tonight, with Liverpool kicking off at 5:30 in the Club World Cup. And then obviously at 7:45 and 8, we have three Carabao Cup quarterfinals: Everton against Leicester, Manchester United play Colchester, and Oxford United take on Manchester City. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, share your views on any Premier League related stories, make sure you get in contact with us. Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be talking about Leicester later in the hour. They drop points at the weekend in the Premier League. They're back in Carabao Cup action tonight against Everton, and a huge game for them on the weekend away at Manchester City. We're going to talk about Brighton later in the hour. How has their style changed from last season, and what are the aspirations for Brighton fans this season? They drew 1-1 on the Monday Night Football away at Crystal Palace. But up next, we'll be reacting more to the game yesterday between Liverpool and Aston Villa, how the young players fared for Liverpool, and also looking ahead to the Reds' Club World Cup semi-final tonight against Monterrey. Love Sport. Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. As I mentioned, there are three Carabao Cup fixtures tonight. There's also the Club World Cup semi-final, with Liverpool playing Monterrey thousands and thousands of miles away over at the Khalifa International Stadium in Doha. One Carabao Cup fixture last night, we saw Aston Villa win 5-0 against Liverpool. Quite a big difference between the average ages. Aston Villa's was 28, Liverpool's was 19. The average date of birth of the Liverpool starting 11, the 18th of June 2000, and I'm not particularly old, as you might have guessed, but that makes me feel rather old, knowing that that was the average starting 11 of the Liverpool starting 11 last night. Obviously, in the end, it was an easy victory for Aston Villa. You look at the scoreline, that tells you that it was, it suggests that it was a one-sided game, but I think the Liverpool youngsters can take a lot of heart from it, and I think one, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, one of the big differences was a ruthless cutting edge in the final third, because Liverpool created some really good chances. Herbie Kane had a couple of really fantastic chances, one of them which Nyland saved, which was a fantastic reactionary save. So that's one of the big differences, and also a kind of a physical point about the development of players, that at the age of 17, 18, and there are a lot of players of that age in this Liverpool lineup, Harvey Elliott at 16, that you're not, in terms of your body, you're not going to have fully physically developed by that age. And I think that was another big difference between the two sides. But Aston Villa do take their place in the Carabao Cup semi-final. For Liverpool, obviously, attention very much turns to the game over in Doha tonight against Monterrey in the Club World Cup semi-final. Earlier on The Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by the former Liverpool defender Gary Gillespie, who was giving his views on last night, the experiences that those young players would have developed from last night, as well as looking ahead to tonight's game over in Doha.
It was difficult to single anybody out, because I thought collectively they played really, really well. I think they did themselves proud. I know it sounds daft after losing 5-0, but I was really impressed with the whole style and the manner they went about their business. They looked very comfortable in possession. They played like Liverpool's first team do. They pressed very well. They put Villa under a lot of pressure. Had a lot of chances as well themselves, and had one of them going in, you never know quite what would have happened. But Villa were always a little bit more savvy, a little bit more streetwise. and they had like the goals at the right time. Got a little bit of luck with a couple of goals, but all in all, I thought everybody did themselves credit. I think there's a couple of them actually. There was a plane waiting for a couple to take them over to Qatar straight after the game, so it'll be interesting to see who's gone. I think maybe Harvey Elliott might have gone, Hoover might have gone, and the big centre back, the Dutch big centre back, whose name's just forgotten me, flipped me out my mind for just now. Yeah. So no, all a lot of positives was out of last night. But obviously looking forward to tonight's game.
I did wonder, because Harvey Elliott had that chance early on, good save by Nyland from memory, but you did wonder whether it might have been a little bit different. It was good to see him, actually. Of course, he's still 16 years old. Certainly looks like he's got something about him.
He's got a real good football brain as well. He's really tricky when he starts running at people. He's got great vision, great awareness. He is certainly one for the future. And, you know, I think there was about three or four of these young guys last night, 16 years of age, and I mean, I always look back to myself at 16 years of age, and there's no way at 16 I could have played on a stage like that. So, you know, I think there's a big, big, big future ahead of a lot of these kids.
Yeah, well, let's just have a look ahead to what's happening this evening. Of course, Liverpool are in the Club World Cup. Now, they take on Monterrey, who are a Mexican club, easy for me to say, that beat Al Sadd. They are managed, actually, by Barcelona legend Xavi Hernandez. Of course, there should be a good team, actually. They've won the CONCACAF tournament four times in the last decade. That's basically their kind of version of the Champions League. So they're no mugs whatsoever. I mean, the idea that Liverpool are jetting out to Doha to take on some kind of minnow side is completely the opposite. I mean, this is a really good side, a good, really good team that prides itself on fast-paced attacking, counter-attacking football as well. I mean, this is basically like Liverpool playing Mexican Liverpool, isn't it?
Well, I think so. I think any time that you're managed by an ex-Barcelona player, I'm sure that the style that Barcelona used to play will be very much the style that the Mexican side will play. I think when you look at it's all kind of geared up from FIFA's point of view to have the South American champions independent. I think it's Flamengo, isn't it, that they're through to the final and play against the European champions. But for a few of the occasions that they've had this competition, it's not quite worked out that way. But that's what FIFA want, and I'm sure everybody will be wanting a Flamengo-Liverpool final. But Monterrey are no mugs, as you rightly say. I think they're struggling a little bit in the division at this moment. I think I saw they were mid-table seventh or something like that, but that kind of goes out the window. They're really concentrated on this, and I'm sure they'll want to win it. As will Liverpool, I'm sure.
Yes, 100%. Just some players to watch out for tonight, and maybe some familiar names for you as well from Monterrey. Rodolfo Pizarro, he's the silver-haired 25-year-old. Of course, he's quite an important player of Mexico's national team. So he'll be on the field tonight. And also, it's worth keeping an eye out as well for 22-year-old central midfielder Carlos Rodriguez, who appears set for quite a lengthy career as well at international level. And a familiar face, former Tottenham striker Vincent Janssen is currently with their squad in Qatar, but unfortunately won't be playing due to injury. But I'm quite keen to get your experiences in the Intercontinental Cup. I mean, that was the previous edition, wasn't it, of the Club World Cup. I mean, just talk to me a little bit about that. Was it taken as seriously as perhaps this is?
In a word, no. we actually travelled. I think I was actually on the fringe of like the first team at the time, so it was an opportunity for me to play because I think Mark Lawson had an injury, and I ended up playing in the game against Independiente in 1985. So it was a kind of big game for me because it was a chance for me to establish myself in the starting 11. But the whole club was geared to like winning the old first division at the time, so this was a kind of like bonus for us, and it was always treated as a little bit of a mid-season break as such. I mean, it was an 8-hour flight. We had to go fly to Anchorage, 8 hours, and then from Anchorage we had to go from to Tokyo, which was another 8 hours, and it was on a scheduled flight. There was no charter plane in the lap of luxury. It was, you were up the back with everybody else, and so it was a bit strange, and it was a bit weird, and you know, it was one of these things that at the time you just got on with and you never really gave it too much thought. But I think looking back, I think most of the lads that played at that time would have maybe said we should have taken it a little bit more seriously and concentrated a little bit more on trying to win the actual thing.
Okay, yes, all right. Look, do you think that Jurgen Klopp has done the right thing by distancing himself from some questions about Qatar kind of as a place, really? The stadium there in Doha is built with
slave labour, essentially. Obviously, we all know that it's not a particularly good part of the world if you care about human rights. Jurgen Klopp has just come back and basically said, just leave it to the politicians. I'm here to play football. Do you think that that's the right way of going about it?
Well, I think that's what you say. You know, as a football manager and certainly as a football player, you kind of get told where to go and you kind of just follow orders. I mean, Jurgen Klopp probably has his own ideas, his own thoughts about the situation, and not just in Qatar, but in most of the Middle East, to be quite honest with you. So, but in saying that, I don't think this is the platform or the place to portray your own beliefs and your own views. I think you just got to get on, get the job done, and do it to the best of your ability. And I'm sure that's what Liverpool have been doing. You know, it's a FIFA competition, isn't it? Let's face it, it's to generate a lot of money. And it's one of these things, but as football is at this moment in time, it's very much a global business. It's very much a money kind of game, and it's money orientated, and hence the reason that you end up playing things like this.
Absolutely. Look, do you think that this actually might be an added boost to Liverpool this year? They're currently sitting pretty at the top of the Premier League, of course, but there's always that risk, especially this time of year, that things can go a bit stale. But this is an opportunity for them to potentially get their hands on some silverware or certainly make moves towards it, and that actually might help them in the Premier League.
It could do. I think it's a trophy, obviously, that they have never won. Notoriously, I think the South Americans do better than maybe what the Europeans do in this competition. I do believe, I'm just reading up on it, you get a badge, I think, put on your jersey, don't you? I think as World Club Cup champions or something like that. So
yeah.
it's another feather in your cap. Could they do without it? Probably they could do at this stage of the season. But in saying that, I think it'll be a little bit of a break for them from the hectic pace and the mundane bit of the Premier League. And it could work wonders. It could be a case of like... I think they've got a mid-season break coming up in February as well. So yeah, I don't think it'll affect the Premier League too much. I think at this moment in time, Liverpool's squad have got such a togetherness. They're absolutely flying high in the Premier League. They're a good team. There's only one team that's beat them this season, and that's Napoli. So...
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this will be a distraction. I think it'll be something that they'll just take in the stride and get on with it.
That was the former Liverpool defender Gary Gillespie, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show. Remember, you can listen to Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6:30 and 10 a.m. Talking about, obviously, last night and a very, very young Liverpool side going down 5-0 to Aston Villa. But I think a lot of them can hold their heads up high. I think in particular, kind of the few standouts for me, Kiana Herver in defence, who was signed from the Ajax Academy 18 months ago. And a lot is expected of him. And there's a lot of excitement around his future. Played recently at the Under-17 World Cup for Holland. Really is very, very comfortable with the ball at his feet. Very comfortable going forward. A little bit like Trent Alexander-Arnold in terms of that confidence with ball at feet to really roam down that right-hand side. Can play right-back and can play centre-back. So a bit of flexibility there. Harvey Elliott probably was the best player for Liverpool last night. Looks like a real talent. Needs to sort out his haircut, but looks like a real talent technically. Very, very good. Plays out on the right wing, left-footed, loves cutting in, but also can take it down the line. And he impressed me in the last few Carabao Cup rounds against MK Dons and Arsenal. So he played very, very well. A couple of other decent performances. Isaac Christie-Davies in midfield looked very, very comfortable. Herbie Kane, other than perhaps missing a couple of sitters, looked good as well. So I think there were some positives to take. And to Kenny Dalglish, this was his tweet. And I think he sums it up pretty well, actually. What a great effort from a very young LFC team tonight. They represented themselves and the club very well. Fantastic support from our fans to encourage them. There were 4,000 to 5,000 Liverpool fans at Villa Park, and a number of those fans then this morning have got on a plane to fly over to Qatar. A memorable night for players, staff and fans despite the scoreline. So I think he sums it up pretty well. Obviously it's disappointing, and it doesn't matter what competition you play, and when your club loses, it's never nice. You don't enjoy it. But I think these players would have learned a lot from last night. Congratulations to Aston Villa for taking their place in the semi-final. And obviously, it's disappointing that we lost. But obviously, we look ahead to tonight. Liverpool play at 5:30. They were talking a bit about there with Gary Gillespie about the game over in Doha. Liverpool will play Monterrey. In terms of an expected 11, a lot of what is expected. This is generally the kind of expected lineup that we are anticipating from Jurgen Klopp tonight. Alisson in goal, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Joe Gomez, Virgil van Dijk and Andrew Robertson across the back four. Jordan Henderson, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Adam Lallana in midfield. And Naby Keita, Jerdan Shaqiri, Divock Origi also in the side. So resting the likes of Firmino and Mane and Salah is expected against Monterrey tonight. That's a 5:30 kickoff at the Khalifa International Stadium. And Gary Gillespie touched on it there, how going back years, the Club World Cup, which was the Intercontinental Cup going back years and years, is treated more seriously now. It is kind of shown a bit more respect than it used to. And I think it is obviously, it's you're effectively, if you win it, crowned club the best club world club side in the world. That's effectively what the title is now. When sort of Flamengo or something win it, you know they're not the best side in the world, but that is officially the title. So obviously Liverpool involved tonight, as I said, a 5:30 kickoff over in Doha as they take on Monterrey in the Club World Cup. The winner of this semi-final will play Flamengo on Saturday after they beat Al Hilal in the other semi-final. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to talk about Brighton a bit later. Neil Morpay scoring his seventh of the season. How good a signing has he been for Graham Potter's side? But up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Leicester.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. One of the sides in Carabao Cup action tonight, away at Everton, is Leicester. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Jamie Thorpe from the First for Leicester podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jamie. Before we look ahead to tonight's game in the Carabao Cup, just looking back at last weekend's game, Leicester dropping points for the first time in a little while. They won a good winning run, drawing 1-1 at home against Norwich last weekend. And it was a game that Norwich could have even won. What's your reaction now? We're a few days on from the game. What was your reaction? Obviously, this now leaves Leicester 10 points behind league leaders Liverpool.
Yeah, it was a game that definitely felt like a loss at the time. It's one of those where you come away from it disappointed with the manner in which we played. I thought that we were... I mean, I'm taking nothing away from Norwich because they played very, very well. Surprised after seeing them that they are in the bottom two. But we didn't play to our full potential at all. But having said that, we still had a lot of chances to get something in the game. Vardy obviously hit the post. Indeed, he had a couple of free headers as well. So even though we weren't exactly firing, we're still creating chances. Like most Leicester fans, I'm not really saying that we're fully in a title race at the moment. So I'm not too worried about the context around there. And we've still only dropped 2 points out of 27. So we're still in very good form. But we really did need a bit of momentum heading into three very, very important games.
What did you make of one of the big talking points from the game was the substitution of Kelechi Iheanacho before half-time? He was withdrawn as it looked like Brendan Rodgers wanted to change things up just as Leicester scored the equaliser. Now, obviously, the weekend, one of the big talking points was in the game at Old Trafford where Moise Kean was substituted 18 minutes after coming on. Now, obviously, slight differences. Obviously, Kean was a substitute that was then substituted. Iheanacho started the game. But what did you make of that decision to be, well, quite cutthroat and withdraw him before half-time?
Yeah, we were playing a shape at the start of the game. We were playing a diamond and Norwich, again, an awful lot of joy down the flanks, which you do when you play that sort of shape. Rodgers obviously decided to change things tactically, so we reverted back to the sort of the 4-3-3 that we've played so much this year that has brought us, you know, quite a lot of joy. And Iheanacho isn't really able to offer what you need out on the wing. He's a guy who sort of thrives going through the middle as a striker, being able to drop in. So he replaced him with an out-and-out winger in someone like Damari Gray. So it was purely tactical. It wasn't necessarily a comment on Iheanacho. There had been a whole fairly mental few minutes beforehand involving Iheanacho not kicking the ball back after being put out for a Norwich player injury. But I don't think that necessarily came into it. It seemed like Iheanacho understood the reaction with him and Rodgers when he came off, looked pretty positive. So, yeah, I don't think it was quite as harsh as Ferguson's treatment of Keane, which was extraordinary, really.
Talking of Ferguson, obviously in the Carabao Cup tonight, Leicester travel to Goodison Park to take on Everton in the Carabao Cup quarter final. Duncan Ferguson has kind of called for a bear pit at Goodison Park. In terms of team selection tonight, what does What does Brendan Rodgers do tonight? Because obviously you mentioned some big games coming up and a pretty big one on Saturday against Manchester City at the Etihad, and then on Boxing Day at home against Liverpool. So some huge, massive Premier League games. So tonight, what's your view on it? Are you thinking you're not far away from a semi-final now? You're 90 minutes potentially away from a semi-final. Let's go full strength. Let's get there. Or are you thinking, actually, let's make some changes because there are some massive Premier League games coming up?
Yeah, it's really hard to decide. I mean, normally I'd favour us going all out for a cup run. It'd be something which it's the sort of competition where I think with our side we are very capable of winning it now. We are the sort of team that can do well in these sort of competitions, especially a semi-final. Our back is over two legs to beat anyone at the minute. So it would be great to see us go full strength. But there are a couple of players within the squad who need a rest, in my view. I think Tielemans has played pretty much every game in both the league and cup competition so far. But we've got the players on the bench that can come in. So I'd expect him to make a few changes. The likes of Hamza Chowdhury, Mark Albright and Tamari Gray, and probably James Justin, the fullback as well, I'd expect to come in. And I'd be happy with that because you're not hugely downgrading your side at all. They're very competent players. But it'll have a strong bench. I'd expect Vardy to play. I'd expect the back centre halves to be the same as well. So hopefully he gives the competition a bit more respect than we've seen in the previous game. And we go all out and try and get to that semi-final.
Obviously, a lot of Leicester's kind of main players have been linked with moves away. Ben Chilwell's been linked to the likes of Chelsea and Manchester City over the last 6 to 12 months. James Maddison's been linked to pretty much any of the kind of big Premier League sides. So there's been plenty of interest. Chaglar Sionku's been linked with a move to Manchester City as well. When you look at that, are you thinking actually that's a massive kind of appraisal of how well Leicester are doing and that's a credit to the club? Or are you actually thinking, starting to get a little bit worried, thinking obviously it's really good at the moment, Leicester sat second in the Premier League table, but if a couple of sides were to come in with massive offers for those players, offers that you can't really turn down, then there's the risk that it could not completely break down, but there could be splinters in it.
Yeah, definitely. You want to keep your side together regardless of the money. I think Rodgers has come out and been pretty unequivocal in what he's saying, that no one will be leaving in January. And personally, I agree. I don't think many clubs would come in with the sort of money that we would demand for players. I mean, like you said, it would be huge. And I think for a player like Maddison, I think Leicester would say, look, unless you're paying into the 100 million, I don't see why we should do anything. They would be that almost ridiculous with their response. So you'd like to think that the players are going to be focused on the opportunity as well. I think it's a completely novel situation again that clubs such as Leicester have got a chance to sort of establish themselves as a top six club. There's an opportunity there to sort of change the status quo of how teams are perceived as well. So, but like you said, whenever you do well, your players are going to be linked away, aren't they? I mean, you know, a club like Leicester, they'll be after the bloody tea lady at some point if we keep going this way. So it's important that we keep the momentum and we'll try and take that as a positive rather than a negative.
You mentioned about a few minutes ago, Jamie, about not necessarily focusing on being in a title race, that a lot of Leicester fans aren't perhaps believing in that hype and believing that they are in a title race. Obviously, Leicester are 10 points off the top. They're 13 points clear currently of Tottenham, who are the first side out of those top four places at the moment. Are you maybe slightly wary of what's happened to Chelsea over the last month? That it seemed 4 or 5 weeks ago that the top four, as it was destined to be the top four. There was no chance that anyone else was getting in there. And thinking, if Leicester were to have a bad 3 or 4 games, suddenly that gap can be halved. It can be reduced significantly. And then you're kind of really looking over your shoulders.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about momentum, isn't it, in this league? I think confidence is breeded by results and vice versa almost. So it is really important to keep that going. You're right, at one point Chelsea were probably shorter odds than we were to sort of be challenging for the top spot as well. And you look at what they've gone through. They're still very capable, aren't they? But they've just gone through a little bit of a rough patch. So it's important that we keep the momentum going with some good results and the performances. So with that in mind, that's why I would expect him to rest a couple of players who maybe look like they need they're in need of it. So it is a worry, especially as we've got a young side, a side that probably haven't got a great amount of experience being in this position. Obviously, you've got your senior guys like Schmeichel and Morgan, Vardy, who have been there and done that. But they will be relied on pretty heavily to keep heads level and to make sure that we keep going in the right direction.
And you mentioned there also, Jamie, about a big game and resting players ahead of Saturday's game. Obviously, it's Manchester City away on Saturday evening. Then on Boxing Day, it's Liverpool at home. What are you looking at in these games and thinking is a decent points haul? Are you thinking if Leicester can get a point in each game, then that's actually decent? Or is there perhaps a bit more of a confident look and thinking, let's go and really go at these teams. Let's try and get as many points as possible.
A couple of weeks ago, I'd have said that, you know, we should be going all out and gunning for a result at the Etihad. But, I mean, they've just hit form at just the wrong time for us. I thought they were brilliant in their last outing. Not many teams go to Anfield and come away with anything, let alone a point. So I think you've got to be realistic. Whilst we are doing very, very well and, you know, we deserve to be second, there's no doubt about that with the way we've played, going to a place such as the Etihad or to Anfield and coming away with a point is a good result. It might not be incredible in the wider context of a title race, for example, but you'd be pleased if you came away with a draw, realistically. But having said that, I think the Man City game in the title-winning season, I said the exact same thing heading into the match, and that really was the game that made myself and a lot less fans think we have a good chance of actually winning the league because we were phenomenal and we beat them 3-1. So it would be great to see us go and be positive, but if you offer me 2 points now, I'd take that.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jamie. That was Jamie Thorpe from the First for Leicester podcast talking about some significant games coming up for Leicester. Obviously, they're in Carabao Cup action in the quarterfinals tonight away at Everton. Two fantastic Premier League games to look forward to involving Leicester over the next, 8-9 days. It's Manchester City against Leicester at the Etihad on Saturday evening and at the King Power on Boxing Day at 8 o'clock. It is Leicester against Liverpool. So two huge, huge games. And I mentioned Chelsea there, and I think that's maybe something that will just not make Leicester fans really worried, but will just make them aware that Chelsea, I think 4 or 5 weeks ago, a lot of people, like myself, were thinking the top four is going to be the top four. No one's got a chance of breaking in there. Chelsea have lost 4 of their last 5 Premier League games. And suddenly, if Tottenham beat them on Sunday, Tottenham go above them on goal difference. So it shows that in the space of a month, and when these fixtures are coming thick and fast, if Leicester do hit a bad patch and do lose a few games, suddenly that gap between themselves and the chasing pack outside the top four can suddenly be massively reduced. So maybe Leicester fans just being a little bit cautious of getting ahead of themselves at the moment. They're involved in the Carabao Cup tonight against Everton. Manchester United play Colchester and Oxford United to take on Manchester City. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Brighton.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact, we want to hear from you this afternoon. Call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Obviously, it'd be great to hear from you this afternoon, sharing your views on your Premier League club. We've talked about the Carabao Cup action this week. We've also talked about the Club World Cup that takes place tonight with Liverpool taking on Monterrey in the semi-finals. On Monday night, the final game of last weekend's action was at Selhurst Park as Crystal Palace and Brighton shared the spoils in a 1-1 draw. To get the Brighton perspective now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by AD Packham from the Albion Raw podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, AD. In an interview that Neil Morpay did after the game, he said that the side were very disappointed to only come away with 1 point. He believed that Brighton deserved all three, considering how much Brighton Hove Albion dominated possession, created chances. Did you come away from that game thinking there was 3 points to be had there?
We were absolutely devastated, to be honest. We were so frustrated. We had over 70% of the possession. We had all the shots on target. Palace didn't have a shot, let alone on target, on goal until the 73rd minute. We completely dominated the game. And in a nice act of symmetry with the game last year, the guy that got their equaliser, as it was the guy who got our winner up at Selhurst last year, shouldn't have actually been on the pitch. So, you know, that's nice.
There was one incident that I wanted to get your views on, AD, and it's, again, we're unfortunately having to talk about VAR the whole time, but they reviewed a decision involving an incident with Jairo Ruedewels and Martin Montoya. It went out for a corner. They reviewed it, revealed that Montoya was onside, then looked at the incident and decided, despite the fact that quite clearly Ruedewels fouled Montoya, didn't get anywhere near the ball and just they made contact with Montoya, the referee didn't overturn the decision. You must have been watching that thinking, are they really watching something else to what everyone else is watching?
And that wasn't the only incident. Basically, like I said, Wilf Sahar should have been sent off. Kouati could have been sent off prior to that. And then we had the penalty incident, which anywhere else, is it a foul anywhere else on the pitch? Yes, it is. Did he? The fact was, he got his shot away. He was too hot. If Martin would have gone down like a sack of spuds, then the referee would have had a different decision to make, I think. But because he actually managed to try to stay on his feet, despite being tripped, and actually managed to get a shot away, I think that's why they didn't actually give it. But yeah, no, it's a penalty all day long.
You make a really good point there, AD, because it happens so often where we complain about players, in inverted commas, cheating, going down too softly, looking like they've been shot from someone, and we criticise that. But the fact of the matter is, AD, that in this day and age, there is no room for honesty. That if you stay on your feet, the referees don't have the cojones, really, to go back and give you a penalty. In fact, it's promoting cheating. It's promoting going down theatrically, because that's the only way you're going to get penalties.
Yeah, you could argue that. I mean, it is frustrating. And like I said, I mean, there was other incidents in the game where VAR should have intervened. Like I said, the two red cards, which no one seems to want to talk about. But I mean, if someone's lying on the floor and the violent conduct of Zahar when he's actually kicked out off the ball, Yves Bissouma, is violent conduct. Red card all day long, and VAR didn't even look at it. It's just, that's what frustrates us. The penalty frustrated us. But ultimately what frustrated us was the fact that our decision-making was not quite up to scratch. We got ourselves into a lot of positions in that game where we could have... If we'd have gone in 4 or 5 nil at half-time, it wouldn't have flattered us. And we really absolutely bossed this game. And the Potter revolution continues. We're absolutely delighted with it. He's got the best out of the existing personnel. We're actually seeing the David Prepper that actually plays for Holland playing for us now. We're seeing Aaron Moyes come to the party. We're seeing all sorts of players. And we are, this time last year, we're going into the new year under Chris Hughton. And we were looking okay. After the new year, our form fell off a cliff and we ended up in relegation trouble.
I'm assuming
that's not going to happen this year.
Sorry, Eddie. I'm assuming that there is a very different feeling amongst Brighton fans. And obviously, you just managed to stay up. It was very, very close between you and Cardiff, that final relegation spot. But obviously, in terms of position, Brighton are doing okay. They're not a million miles away from the relegation zone. Bad form could change that. But is it a case of the fact that Brighton are able to dominate these types of games? They're able to have possession. They're able to play out from the back. They're able to control games. That away at Arsenal, for example, Arsenal were terrible, but Brighton played really well. Is that one of the big differences that you're seeing, that Brighton fans are enjoying watching their team more than they did, much more than they did last season?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's an evolution and a revolution at the same time. It's like as Graham Potter himself says, it's not going to happen overnight. The players are having to learn new tactics. They're going to have to be flexible. They have to change formation a lot of time, 3 or 4 times during the game, depending on how we're playing. This time last year, we were pretty much on the same level of points as we are now. So, it's not happening overnight in terms of the points production. But yeah, we've bought into what Graham's done to us. We're looking at the style of play, we're looking at the chances we're creating, and I think we're maybe one or two players away from being a side that's going to be regularly competing in the top half of the table.
And just finally, AD, I want to take your views on Neil Maupay. It was his 7th goal of the season
in that game at Selhurst Park. Obviously, he had a very impressive season at Brentford in the Championship last season. One of the big questions is always, can a player step up? That you look at, for example, Che Adams, a very similar player to Morpay in the Championship last season. He's really struggled in a struggling Southampton side. Morpay looks with every game like he's getting more and more comfortable in the Premier League.
I think it's a confidence thing. He said himself in his interview after the Arsenal game that he'd been struggling a little bit. But, you know, the goal that he scored at the Emirates, combined with his first-time finish against Wolves, again, another goal against Palace, he's growing into it. There's still an element of frustration about him, I think, from us. We think that he's taking... And this is how far we're progressing, because we were under Chris, we were not necessarily creating that many chances. So, but it seems to take him 3 or 4 opportunities to actually take the goal. But he's getting those chances, but he's missing a few before he actually scores. So, he could have easily had a hat trick on Monday. But, you know, he's getting better and better and better, and long may that continue. We're enjoying him. But I think there's still more to come.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ailey. That was Ailey Packham from the Albion Raw podcast, expressing some frustration there at some of the refereeing decisions on Monday night. And I think the point he makes about Martin Montoya is a fantastic point, that there was an incident where... a few weeks ago when Liverpool were playing Napoli and Salah was rugby tackled pretty much by Kalidou Koulibaly, and he didn't go down, he tried to keep playing, but the referee doesn't give anything. And I think we're on this path, or we are in an era where kind of not honesty isn't rewarded in football, that actually you sometimes hear former pros saying, go down. And how on earth have we reached this point where people are kind of condoning doing that? That it's fit believe that that the English have taken a long time to get up to speed with everyone else of going down in the box very, very softly. But that's the only way you do it. I remember there was a game where I think it was West Ham were playing Arsenal, and Matt Jarvis stayed on his feet against Arsenal. It was an absolute categorical penalty. Jarvis stays on his feet, tries to score, misses, and no penalty is given. And you're wondering, what on earth are you doing? That wasn't an advantage. This player has decided to stay on his feet to try and score, and he hasn't scored, so he should be rewarded. Instead, you actually get rewarded. That's why when people criticise players saying they've gone down so softly, look how theatrical that dive was to the floor. I'll tell you what, there's a really good reason why players do that. It's because that's the only way you get penalties. Until Premier League, or it doesn't matter, actually, it's not just Premier League, it's around Europe. Until referees start rewarding players for honesty and trying to stay on their feet, then you will just see this get out of hand and players just go down as if they have just been shot from long range. That's all that's going to happen. You're just going to have continuously players going down like a sack of potatoes until we see referees give these decisions. So I can completely understand, because that one was ridiculous on Monday. How on earth is a referee, look at that, Riedewald is nowhere near the ball and quite clearly just fouls Montoya and doesn't concede a penalty. You look at that and the referee, the arrogance to go, nope, I'll tell you what, the referee's made the right decision there. Who on earth genuinely believes that? Other than Crystal Palace fans, I don't think anyone else agreed with that decision. Brighton's next game at home against Sheffield United this coming Saturday. Just a reminder, obviously, some of the big stories in the Premier League. Carlo Ancelotti is set to become the next Everton head coach in a 4.5-year contract either tomorrow or Friday. Mikel Arteta, still some complications to get through, but he is expected to be in the Arsenal dugout against Everton at Goodison Park on the weekend. 3 more Carabao Cup fixtures to come tonight. Aston Villa are already through. It's Everton against Leicester, Oxford United against Manchester City, and Manchester United play Colchester United. A bit of transfer news ahead of the January transfer window. Takumi Minamino, the Japanese international and RB Salzburg forward, he's undergoing a medical at Liverpool today ahead of a January move for just £7.25 million. An absolute bargain. He's a fantastic young player, versatile player that can cover all three of those front three positions, and really impressed me when he played against us in the Champions League group stages. Really, really high energy, high intensity player. Solskjaer used to playing in that type of a system where you're pressing high up the field. He's set to sign for Liverpool on January 1st, so long as there are no hiccups with the medical. Is set to sign for Liverpool ahead of the January transfer window opening for just £7.25 million, which is his release clause at Red Bull Salzburg.
This is Love Sport.